And welcome back. You're listening to 3CR and Green Left Radio on 8:55 AM. And in the studio with me, I have Matt. Matt is from the ANMFU and is a rank and file member and has, is here with us today to talk about the rank and file support of Palestine. Welcome to the studio, Matt.
Awesome. Great to be here, and good morning, humans. Awesome to be with you. So I'm a nurse. I'm part of the ANMF, which is the Nurses Union, and we're a group of nurses and midwives who have gathered around the issue of Palestine. I spoke to a doctor recently from South Australia who'd returned from Gaza, and he said Palestine's more than a nationality. It's now a set of values. And so we're nurses who hold this values of human rights, of solidarity with our colleagues 14,000 kilometres away. And we've joined together in the fight for Palestinian liberation. But it's much more than that. It's the liberation of all Indigenous people and all of us from systems of oppression. So as a set of humans who happen to be nurses, we're also gathered around a set of values that bind us together.
Matt, that's brilliant. That is excellent to hear. And would you mind just telling our listeners just what got you into unions? How did you become involved in the fight for Palestine?
Yeah, so I'm a union delegate, and really inspired by those Irish union members some 40 years ago who refused to handle the grapefruit that came from South Africa, and decided, we're going to take a stand. It was such a small step for these young shopkeepers or sales assistants to take, but they took that first step, and it did show me the power of unions for social good. So not just your own factory floor, but looking up and projecting yourself to factory floors across the world, and then imagining better futures for all workers. And so I was really inspired by that. But I'm from Aotearoa, New Zealand. I have Māori heritage from Aotearoa. But Australia has such a strong union history of bettering the world, Medicare, superannuation, the paper interleave. It just goes on and on, where unions have said, we empathise with people and we're going to take a stand. And we're seeing that again, this kind of renaissance of unionism. And Palestine's been able to bring that out. Again, it's more than just a geographical place. It's now, it's a cause, it's a set of values, it's a rallying call for unions to look up, to work together cohesively, not just for their own betterment, for example, on their own factory floor, but for a better world. And that's really inspired me. And I've been really inspired by younger union members. So I'm in my 50s, but when I look at the 19, 20 plus year olds who are embracing the union call, and also embracing human rights and wanting a new world. And they inspire me to get out of bed, get involved in Palestine and all the other union actions.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting to note that, sorry, listeners, I forgot to turn my microphone on. It's quite interesting to note as well that with this renaissance, as you put it, of unionism, we are currently seeing some of the most horrific and most inflammatory attacks on unionism in this country, and so as people start to get more involved in unionism and we see a stronger movement flourish, we also have to be vigilant that we are defending our unions and our ability to actually come together collectively to organise our workplaces. That is such a powerful struggle that is connected with almost every socio-economical and political issue in this country, because the majority of us are workers in this country. We produce the wealth and all the goods in this society. Yeah. So thank you for talking about that. I'd like to just also ask you now a bit about the condition of workers in Gaza, but also the West Bank as well. We've heard all this harrowing stuff coming out of there. We've seen hospitals bombed. We've seen doctors and nurses killed. I'm not sure what the status is of other health workers, like occupational therapists and so forth. So we'd like to know a little bit about the conditions of people providing healthcare in Gaza, but also West Bank, and then perhaps a little bit about the targeting, the intentional targeting murder and intimidation of these healthcare workers.
Yeah, happy to. So I passed four hospitals on my way here, and because handover is kind of, you know, early in the morning, I saw all of my colleagues heading to work in their scrubs. And yesterday I saw the same colleagues, but they were just happened to be Palestinian in the West Bank, getting shot at, wearing the same scrubs. So there's two really, you know, that contrast between what's happening here and then what's happening there. So I'll relay some stories for you from PANSMA, which is a fantastic organisation, Palestinian-Australian New Zealand Medical Association. So they are an Australian-based medical mission, NGO, charity that go into Gaza. And so what they've been telling us is that some of the areas are stabilising, but, I mean, still an absolute ruin. So a lot of the acute trauma has stopped, but now all of the other stuff that you would be busy doing within hospitals, like all the chronic diseases, cancers, heart disease, diabetes, all those things, they all need to be attended to because none of that's been attended to. So now there's such a need in the south and the middle of Gaza to focus on just normal population health, the kind of bread and butter stuff hospitals are full of, all of the accidents and all the other stuff that go on. So there is, depending on which part of Gaza you're in, there's different needs of that population. Mm. Malnutrition's something that is incredibly concerning. One of the important things is with a population that's starved, you just can't go in and give food. You have to acclimatize their body to food, otherwise you get something called refeeding syndrome. Mm. And children are really at risk of that. So there needs to be such a coordinated strategy. So on the ground, it is really minimal resources. No one's getting paid. They're just turning up volunteering. In the parts that are heavily bombed, then you're looking at mass trauma, mass casualty, lots of deaths, lots of amputations, as we've seen on the social media. Mm-hmm. You know, the biggest cohort of amputees the world's ever known is happening right in front of our eyes. So it's bad. It's worse than bad. And this weekend, healthcare workers from around the world are convening in Geneva, and it's called the White Coat Protest. And so doctors, nurses, allied health are all converging in Geneva to protest in front of the UN and the WHO offices, and they'll be protesting for as long as they can. So look out on social media for that action. And it's the global health response to this targeting of hospitals, this destruction of hospitals. Because when you destroy a hospital, you're destroying the future as well for a population, which is part of a tactic of genocide. You know, if you destroy maternity services, you're trying to destroy the future. If you destroy IVF services and blow up embryos, you're trying to destroy a future. Mm. And this is what we've coined as omnicide. So it's destruction of all things in all places in Palestine. More than genocide, it's destruction of all buildings, of all animal life, of all ecosystems. Mm. And certainly looking that strategy of targeting hospitals is something we haven't seen. And also we who are witnessing that on our phones for the first time are also then living in the gap of our medical institutions, our healthcare institutions, and their complete silence on it. And so when you go and speak to and confront healthcare leaders about it, they look at you as if, like, what are you talking about? They just don't get it. Mm. And because they have not the moral courage to pick up their phone and look at what we look at.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. When you talk about the omnicide, the destruction of all aspects, the totality of Palestinian society, you know, certainly things like healthcare are crucial to the flourishing of people. And what we're seeing now is in the absence of death by the bullet or the bomb is the slow death by easily preventable, you know, conditions such as malnourishment, exposure, and, you know, things that could so easily be treated here. So that's absolutely egregious situation to be in, certainly, you know, I mean, I know Steph and I both have sort of backgrounds in healthcare professionalism, but you know, we look at this and this absolutely contravenes some of the most basic axioms that healthcare is premised on. So I think anyone involved in healthcare should be appalled by the situation in Gaza.
Yeah, and Francesca Albanese, the special rapporteur for the region, has called specifically for all healthcare workers around the world to boycott, to withdraw support from Israel as a way to send that message back that their necropolitics, their necro theory, their necro ideology, so necro meaning death, this death cult, which can only it only knows how to destroy. We should withdraw all support for Israeli institutions. Now, that's important because Australia receives Israeli doctors on rotations. We train them. So there's a whole lot of things our institutions need to do to answer that call. There are products, Israeli products, on our shelves that we use every single day within healthcare, and we have to start boycotting. We have to withdraw our contract and our procurement with these companies that are complicit or lending any kind of legitimacy to this the necropolitics of Israel.
Absolutely, absolutely. And necropolitics, just for listeners who may not be aware, to put it in a nutshell, it's essentially looking at the question of whose life matters, who can die, who can live and who can die. And this is a question that is tied to imperialism and the accumulation of capital as it, you know, plays out through the colonization of Palestine by Israel, backed by the United States and countries such as Australia. So although it is really just the minimum demand that people have been making, can you tell us a little bit about what this ceasefire means to the global movement and community of healthcare workers who are coming out in solidarity for Gaza?
Yeah, our Turkish colleagues, so they are looking to establish a humanitarian corridor. So one of the demands of the Geneva White Coat protest is that a humanitarian corridor is opened up, and so that Gazans who need medical treatment have a place to have that treatment. So it gives us the medical community across the world to start to mobilise and start to encourage governments to allow these type of medical missions. So few countries have taken on Gazans who need support from a medical perspective. So there's a desperate need for a humanitarian corridor. Then obviously aid trucks, and then the re-establishment of basic health services. So that's tent clinics dealing with all of the infectious diseases and then all the chronic diseases, plus all the wound care and all the aftercare that has to occur. You know, when you're looking at footage of people being operated in Gaza, like, there needs to be afterwards a whole lot of care, a whole lot of rehab that needs to happen somewhere. And they've pulverized the healthcare system. So there's literally no buildings for this rehab to occur, the wound management to occur. That's let alone the mental health aspects of this genocide. So the ceasefire for the health community gives us a chance to mobilise, to continue our demands for a permanent ceasefire, but also getting aid in. At the moment, essentially only 15 people are allowed in every week, healthcare professionals allowed in every week. So if you've got a medical mission going to Gaza, you've got to wait for someone to opt out and leave before they can replace. So it's a one-in, one-out policy. And that's just not enough. Thousands of healthcare workers are needed, but also the expertise that exists in other countries, Gazans deserve to head there and be treated. So that's what the ceasefire means specifically for us.
Yeah, absolutely. And even just touching on what you've talked about there and in the prior question that we asked, this healing will not happen in the absence of, you know, food, nourishment. It won't happen in the absence of community. And just putting on my medical anthropology hat as well, and referring back to that omnicide that you said, it is not simply enough that we flood Gaza with medical professionals. The community, the society, you know, the institutions of care and solicitude, the ecology, all of these aspects must be present in order for people to actually heal. And this isn't just a statement about trauma and mental health as well. Wound management, there is so much evidence coming from biomedical research, but also anthropological observations of healing and, you know, flourishing from all around the world, from so many different societies and cultures, that people will not even physically heal in the absence of, you know, ecological and social conditions that allow that to happen. Mm. So, you know, whenever we're talking about this medical intervention and, you know, health professionals showing up and advocating for Gaza, it is so important, as you've done quite excellently, to always be connecting this to other sort of social and political issues, because, you know, healthcare, health isn't something that exists in a vacuum. Medical institutions and health institutions in general are not abstract institutions that just kind of exist in society. They are also political institutions. Absolutely. Everything that happens in a hospital, in a clinic, is political.
Yeah, I love that you raised that. There's, when I was marching, a woman said to me, she turned and she saw all of the nurses marching. We often wear watermelon scrubs, so we find every way to represent and resist. And she said, our nurses look after the physical health, they look after the mental health, and now they're looking after the political health. Mm-hmm. And so political health is a concept that is part of a nurse's scope of practice. If we don't live in a political healthy society, there's implications for mental health, there's implications for physical health. So political health is part of the scope of health professionals to be concerned about. And health is political. Genocide is a public health emergency. It's a political emergency. And as nurses who assess and diagnose bodies, we also look at the population as a body as a whole, and we're diagnosing something's terribly wrong and we need intervention. So political health is a really important concept for healthcare workers to expand their scope of practice and to hold the political health of the nation and of the world as part of their concern.
Absolutely. Fantastic. So, Matt, we do have to sort of start wrapping up this interview, but before we let you go, is there anything else you'd like to add or anything you'd like to quickly plug?
Yeah, look, I really encourage you to support APAN. It's really great to be on the streets but also then jump in and help APAN, which is the Palestinian Relief Aid Agency, here locally, so you can get in contact with Gazans who are newly arrived who need support. That's really important to kind of balance the imagining, you know, better futures 14,000 kilometres away, but you've got people who are, you know, a couple of kilometres away from you that need support who have recently right from Gaza. Keep a lookout for PANSMA and some of the fundraising that they do. They're funding more Australian doctors and nurses heading over to Gaza. So always have a place in your heart for them if you see anything on social media.
Thank you. You were listening to an interview with Matt, who is ANMF representative of Rank and File in support of Palestine. Thank you so much for being on Green Left Radio on 3CR 855.